RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everyone. This is the Landry Football Podcast for September 5th, Thursday, September 5th, to be exact. And I am Chris Landry, and taking you through the world of football. We have, in a lot of different platforms, reacted a lot this week to the goings-on in the world of college football, getting ready for the NFL season, which opens tonight in Chicago, 150th anniversary for the NFL. Bears, Packers can't think of two better teams in terms of the historical perspective, the oldest rivalry in pro football. So lot to react to, lot to look forward to, lot to focus on in terms of what I'm looking for this weekend. Things that intrigue me. Things that I think would be intriguing for you as a football fan, in addition to the games that you pull for. We know that is first and foremost what you like, what you want. I get that. But of other things, some things to look forward to. So we're going to get into that. Answer your questions. My goodness, we've got a whole bunch of them. Great job on the questions. And most of you are doing a really good job of telling me where you want to answer it, this podcast or others, because I can't really, you know, I mean, I can answer them, but if you're not listening to all of them, and I hope you are, but I recognize there's a lot of them, and there's time commitments to you. So, listen, if you, I'm going to answer your questions. Just make sure you know where I'm going to answer them, and I'm going to answer them where you want me to answer them. So make sure you do that. Some of you are doing a really good job getting into the habit of that. Really appreciate that. Want to remind you about LandryFootball.com. If you've not taken advantage of it, we got our 50% off in-season special. What does it really mean? Well, you get an entire year, football season, going to the draft season, recruiting. Go to the Alt Free Agency all the way through next year at this time. One full calendar year. Not 1 year as in the football season. One full calendar year. All the way to next year at this time. 50% off for $49.99. What's that? $4 a month if you take advantage for an entire year. You can get the insights that we think are very unique, very detailed, lots of it, covering all aspects of it. We always say, you like football, you love LandryFootball.com. Check us out today. Hey, if that doesn't work for you, you just want to try it for a month. Hey, it's $9.99 a month. Very reasonable. Try it out for a month or two. You want to try it out for 3 months? Got those options. Listen, we make it easy for you. We appreciate you listening to this podcast. And if you're listening to this podcast, and if you're listening, we hope that you like what you hear. You're going to get more in-depth stuff at LandryFootball.com. So, enough of that. Boy, we got some good news for you. For those of you that like to, oh, let's just say partake in some game of chance of football, may we say? Oh, man, we got some good news for you. The great folks at MyBookie have something special for you. I'm excited about it. I'm going to tell you about that in a little bit. Really good stuff. I'm looking at it. I can hardly contain myself. Anyway, I'm going to get to that in a bit, but you want to stay tuned for that. If you've thought about putting something down on games, now's the time to really do it. So we'll get into that in a second. All right. Want to, though, get to some questions. I want to talk a little bit, though, about kind of finishing up a little bit of the mental part of the game and teaching players in adjustments sideline. We had some issues in college football last week where the lack of adjustments were an issue. I get asked this a bunch. You know, how is the strategy different in college and the NFL? There's strategy involved everywhere. There are different types of strategy. There's much more complexities with game plans, adjustments, more mentally on the plate of players at the NFL level. Much more. First of all, they're professionals. It's a full-time job. They get paid. Their level of accountability is greater. Also, the talent gap between the best team and the worst team in the NFL is far narrower. The resources are a lot closer. there's a huge gap in college football. There's some programs that it's really hard to screw up. I mean, even if you don't do a good job, you're still going to win a certain amount of games at big-time programs. And there are some places where the job's so tough that just going 6-6 is as good as winning 11 or 12 games at another place, resource-wise. So there's a complete different gap that, yes, there is parity in the NFL. And there's parity because the worse you are, the better chance you get of taking players away from better teams, picking higher in the draft. So you've got a lot of advantages to rebuilding if you're not really good. That's why you often see, like in Miami with the Dolphins, teams that are in a rebuild mode. When you come in, you want to take your shots at rebuilding in your own image early on, because when you try to do it 2-3 years in the process, sometimes it's a little bit late. So the importance of schematics is greater and more prevalent in the NFL. It is going to make the difference in more NFL games. In college, you can look, for example, breaking down the Alabama-Duke game. I thought Duke had an unbelievable game plan. I thought they did things to kind of early on make Alabama think, adjust. I mean, still lost 42-3. And yeah, it was a good coaching job by Duke and Cutcliffe and his staff. It's not going to show. How many games in the NFL? If there's a 42-3 game in the NFL, the world is coming to an end in that NFL city, and heads are going to roll, by God, because you have to collapse to have a 42-3 game. Yet it's more common in college because there is that much of a gap, and you don't ever see a 42-3 game in the NFL where you say, you know what, team that scored three, they got beat 42-3. They really did a good job of preparing. They did a good job of adjusting. you don't ever see that in the NFL. So I preface that because I want to talk and continue to pick up where I left off with learning the game, understanding the game, teaching it to players, and all these adjustments. We've talked about situations at Tennessee and Florida State and South Carolina, places where there's a lot of upheaval, a lot of disgruntlement. Is that a word? Disgruntlement? I just invented it if it's not. Dumb football guy trying to create new words in the dictionary. A lot of disgruntled fans. What, you know, the that is a big part of, you know, certain people are better. College is about, it's about recruiting, it's about sales, first and foremost. If you have an ability to be a great teacher and developer and a strategist, it puts you on the top. The reason why Saban in Alabama, well, Saban's the best ever, it's a combination of things. First of all, he's got all the resources. If you take the same Nick Saban and you put them at, you know, a school like South Carolina, which has got good resources, you know, got a lot of fan support, a lot of money, but nowhere near the resources at a place like Alabama, he's not going to win national championships at South Carolina. He wouldn't. He could be there 10, 12 years, win games. Getting it done there, he could probably win 9, 10 games a year. He could do what he did at South Carolina, what he did at Michigan State. Now, he's a better coach now than he was at Michigan State, more experienced. But if he went back to Michigan State or South Carolina, he wouldn't win national championships there. He'd do a really good job. He'd do as good a job as you can get done. But the reason why Saban is the best is because he's got great resources and he develops players. So, and he's great at making strategical adjustments in-game, between series, halftime, between weeks of preparation. So he's got the entire package. Oh, the naysayers, the jealous folks will say, he just wins with talent. No, you don't just win with talent. You've got to coach him up. Now, it's different with Nick. He's more of the developer and the overseer of the coaching staff and a groomer of coaches. Whereas, say, Clemson, right now may have the best program going, it's more of a culture-based, and it's more dictated what they do schematically and development-wise comes from the coaching staff, not Dabo. It's okay. I've had a couple of questions on Twitter about that. Oh, there's a, you know, if you're comparing, like, for example, Jimbo Fisher is more like Saban in terms of his style. He's a much better coach strategically than Dabo. They're not better as a staff than Clemson, but Jimbo's different. And the difference is if you're not that guy, then you've got to hire people that are that guy, and you can't change it. Like last year, I mean, there's no doubt last year's staff, Saban made some bad hires, but he was able to adjust to it, go in, kind of run the defense for a couple of weeks, get the transition from Tosh Lapoy to Pete Golding calling the defense, and no one on the outside ever even knew. It didn't really have an effect until, well, maybe they didn't play quite as well in the SEC championship game and in the playoffs and in the championship game. Yeah, folks, unfulfilled promises, unfulfilled expectations, they made it all the way to the national championship game. That happens. Bad hires happen at Clemson. You see them go 8-4, 9-3 because the ability of the head coach to jump in as a strategical force is not the same at one place or the other. And that's not a criticism. We're all different as coaches, as scouts, as people, as players. When I say this receiver is really strong and really quick, but he doesn't have speed, this guy is really explosive and he's got really good speed. I'm not critical of one versus the other. I'm saying they're different in terms of their skill sets. Coaching's no different. Jimmy Johnson wasn't a great X's and O guy, and he has won in the college and NFL level championships. He's a great program builder. So, again, understand that. So, I'm going off on a tangent, as I tend to do, listeners to this show know. But so, the ability to develop you and strategize, if you are and you're also very talented, that gives you the edge in why they've won so many championships at Alabama. And maybe why some other programs are falling a little bit short, particularly as it relates to winning championships. So the intelligence level of the players and how you teach is extremely important because you have a limited time with them in a 20-hour work week in college. It's less impactful. You need to simplify. They are students. They have a lot of time away from football. So how you do it is a little bit different, but the importance of intelligent football can't be emphasized enough. And oftentimes, and we see this maybe in some of the games that you watched last week, oh man, I question the effort. They were loafing. There's some things like in the Tennessee game, and I mentioned this in a couple of other forums and interviews this week. When the ball is going to the boundary and guys are loafing to chase, that's not an assignment issue. That's an effort issue. You have to determine as a coach, they're lacking heart, they're lacking effort, or are their legs tired, and they just can't go anymore. Their heart and their mind wants to chase, their legs won't allow them to. You got to make that determination. You got to know. You've got to evaluate everything stem to stern on what's going on. But let me just say this. Oftentimes on the snap, people assume. What do we say about assuming, right? Assume, oh boy, that's bad effort. It may not be bad effort. It may be confusion. It may be hesitancy because they're not quite sure what they're looking at. They're not quite sure what's happening, and some level of adjustment is needed. And not complacency, not lack of heart in some of those cases. It is a lack of fundamental understanding of what's going on. Now, I'm not saying with any level of specificity in any one case, it's more this or more that. That's what you have to decide as a coach. You know if you need to scale down what you're doing, if it's paralysis by analysis and you're dealing with too much, or if it's just heart, if it's conditioning. Again, you got to figure that out as a coach. But I kind of go into a circle, again, of understanding from a coaching standpoint, big picture items, understanding that your team and where they are and their level of understanding is all important. But to kind of pick up into the smarts of it, you got to really focus, let's just say as a defensive coach, you got to do a great job of staying on your players about all the things they need to remember. What you do within the confines of our defense and what we need to do this week against this opponent and what to see. So I know, for example, we may not practice the cat blitz all week, okay? But based upon how we've practiced it before, you've got to remember that. It's kind of like in school when you're taught something, you move on and you go on to something else, but it's building blocks. At some point deeper into the semester, you may have to go back to a certain thing that was taught to you and need to remember it. You often hear good teachers say, you need to remember this. You need to know this. This is a fundamental part of what you're going to need to know going forward in this class. This is a football class. So while we may not call the cat blitz because it may not be necessary for a certain period of time, you need to know it if we call it later on, just like anything else. So you got to refresh the player's memory, warn players. Look, you need to know this, and it's always good to give reminders. But I always tell players, particularly in the NFL, you better know this because not every coach coaches the same, meaning not every teacher teaches the same, right? Well, not every coach is going to remind you. They're just going to expect that you need to line up and run it properly. And the fact that, oh, coach, you didn't ram it up our heads and everywhere else this past week, you can't grow if you constantly have to go back and rehearse everything. There is a responsibility of learning. Again, greater in the NFL than in college, but you've got to know it. And you got to remind guys, but you've got to, as a player, refamiliarize yourself just in case we need to run this. So, again, if it's the secondary, a cat blitz, how do we do it, when we do it, when we need to call it, all the responsibilities. Another blitz, another coverage, another front on the offensive side formationally, how we're going to block this. You may go in with a game plan offensively. This is how we're going to block their front. They may do things schematically very different. Guess what? You got to be prepared. You prepared for A, they do B. You know what adjustments are? Guys, remember last year against Florida? Remember how we protected that? You got guys that were back. Or if in the NFL, 2 years ago against the Cardinals, remember the recall of how we did it? And you can't have, finger on the chin saying, oh, Cardinals, Florida 3 years ago. No, I don't remember that. Well, first of all, hopefully the players that you're telling it to were part of it. But the ones that are, okay, hey, this is what we're doing. We're sliding it this way. And you need to be able to adjust it. So in other words, because you may not have prepared for something specific for this week because you didn't see it on tape from a scouted look, you need to have it in your bank of coaching that we might see this, we might not see that. What you taught in week two can't be forgotten because in week six, unexpectedly, after the first or second series, at halftime, at some portion of the game, you're going to need to call upon that. And you're going to be responsible for knowing your responsibilities as a player. And you only know it if you've done your homework. And if you're not coached well enough and you're not hounded upon well enough as a player by your coach, that's an issue with them. But it's your responsibility to know it too. And it's your responsibility to recruit or draft players that are very cerebral, can learn, and have a thirst for knowledge and learning. Players that don't have it don't make it, because you can coach it all you want. You can lead the horse to water. If they don't work and study it, you're gonna be dead in the water in some of the adjustments. So if you go back in the world of in the 70s and the 80s, there were simplified offenses and even simpler defenses. Now, offensively, you're coming out in 10 different personnel groups, the first 10 plays. They're facing defenses with a bunch of variations with a base, a big base, a nickel, a big nickel, a dime, a fast dime. I mean, it's a full-on chess match where it was really good on good, my guy block your guy better, make a play. It's a lot more schematically diverse. You always hear from rookies in the NFL. You always hear from freshmen in college. The biggest adjustment to the next level is the speed. Not the physical speed. Yeah, guys do run faster and are bigger. That's not the biggest difference. When they talk about the speed, while they may be talking to some degree about the physical speed, for the most part, it's the mental speed of the game. The speed in which you need to respond, that's what really hurts young guys. That's what really is the biggest adjustment factor. A player can't react physically until he understands what he's seeing. So you can take the fastest guy if they're slow to react, but not because they're dumb, but because they're a little confused. It's not so much, oh, they practice the wrong thing. You don't ever practice the wrong things because you don't know with 100% certainty what you're going to see. In college, pretty much would people do schematically is what they do. They're not going to change a lot. In the NFL, there's a lot of morphing and a lot of changing that's based upon team-specific, opponent-specific looks. We will adjust what we do. College, not so much. However, there is some of that in college, and when it does happen, you have to call upon what you do well, and you have to call upon how you're going to play that, how you're going to adjust that. Now, again, you've got an advantage. It may not. That's part of the reason why sometimes teams that are really, really good, but maybe teams that are not really as talented but are well-coached, it's why sometimes the margin of victory is not as what it always seems to be, because you have some schematic adjustments and the guys don't adjust as well in the game, and you have to win just by being better physically. And, you know, I don't agree in wins are ugly, but sometimes you win in the eyes of the media and the fans ugly because, you know what, they buddied it up on the other side. So there's a lot of things that factor in. It takes a while to become a pro, about 3 years in the NFL, to know everything, because there's a lot more that you need to know. In college, it takes a little while. And you can play guys young, but it depends upon their ability to learn, their ability to retain, how hard they work in studying film and understanding what they see. You can watch film all day. Do you know how to watch film? You get people say, oh, I watch the film. Yeah, you may have watched the film. Do you know what you're looking at? Do you know how to watch it? Do you know what to look for? That's the key. You know, it's a big reason why veteran players at the college and NFL level are so important to the team's development. You know, yeah, you got guys that can contribute in teaching the young guys how to prepare and learn. So it's kind of like, yeah, your teacher is teaching the class, but you got your friend that maybe has a real understanding of a certain aspect in your English class or your math class that can help you. Maybe say it a different way. Maybe spend time with you on the weekend, spending a few hours. Maybe it clicks for you. That's what veteran players, experienced players on your roster can help you do to augment your coaching, to reinforce what you've done. Yeah, I had a problem with that too, and here's how I got it figured out. So those things are important. I think one of the more overlooked elements of great players, Brady, Manning, you know the ones, quarterbacks, was how they developed and took ownership of working with young players, particularly receivers, because you can't do things physically. So quarterbacks take their receivers, they get them up to speed, you know, a private tutor after class, whatever you want to call it. You know, so all of a sudden you got young guys that were up to speed quicker than in most cases, because there are no rules against a quarterback getting together and calling all the receivers and spending extra time. And they've got the money to do that, put guys up in a hotel. That's what Manning used to do. Or go to Duke and spend time with Cutcliffe and stay in the dorm or stay in the local hotel and have some camaraderie and go eat at night but spend all day working out. That's invaluable because, you know, you got limited amount of time in some of the goofy rules that you can spend with your coach, with your players. That's amazing. Can you imagine that? You're a salesman. You got a good sales manager. Oh, no, but there's a rule. There's an industry rule that says you can only spend, you know, X amount of minutes a week with your salesman. On what planet does that make any sort of sense in terms of learning and teaching and developing your skills? We got some unique rules in the NFL, and then certainly in college, the time you spent. And I know it can be abused, and you could get kids too much focused on football and not on their academics in college, but I think there's some of that that can be improved upon. We hear about it. Leadership, leaders in college, leaders in the NFL, particularly from the quarterback position, and other guys, defensive guys. You know, there's. I give you an example too. Ray Lewis. Yeah, Ray Lewis is a Hall of Fame player. Yeah, he was a great player. He was instinctive. He loved studying film, and you know what he did? Every Thursday night, he had pizza night. He would order pizza for all the defense. He'd take in all the linebackers, but secondary guys as well would come in. And they would buy pizza for the young, and they'd sit in at Ray's home. He had a setup. He had a room specially for it, and they sat there and watched film. And he schooled them on how he did it, little tips, to augment the coaching. That's invaluable. You want to know why players play well around and why he was great? That's the reason why they're great. It's because they do those extra things. Not obligated to do that. He did that. He made a lot of money. But, you know, he didn't need to spend it on pizza every week or whatever they bought. It was usually pizza night, I was told. It's invaluable. So when you got he and you got Ed Reed both in there, and you got the secondary and linebackers, and Ray's schooling up the defensive front, and Ed Reed's schooling the secondary, you think that helps? Yeah, that makes coaching a lot easier. That reinforces it big time. Teaching players, particularly in the NFL, learning styles. And I think this is applicable to college as well, but learning styles. There are three prominent entry points for information. Auditory, hearing, visual, reading it, seeing it, and what we call tactile, just touching or physical demonstration. I think, and this is a big part of what I do, and I implement it when running the combine, not so much just how smart a player is. That's pretty easy to identify what type of learner he is. It's going to fall in. He's going to be better learning in one of those three areas. He just is. It's all of us are different. Spending a lot of time figuring that out is important. I, in my clinic work, one of the most successful clinic areas in both college and the NFL is to talk about how do these guys learn? Do you know how do you guys learn? So it's really important, and I challenge every coach. Take your play. You're coaching a position. You're coaching linebackers, running backs, whatever. Every player. You need to have a file on every player, and you need to grade how do they learn. If you don't know every player at your position, how do they learn? Then you're not doing your job as a coach. You have to fundamentally know that before you can teach them. So I always say, write down the type of learner. You can make it multiple choice. In fact, I would give it in a form and say, you fill out the player's name, and one of the questions is auditory, visual, tactile. You'd be surprised. How many guys don't know what their players are? I'm not real sure. It's how I teach it. Well, you may know it. You're not getting paid for what you know. As a coach, you are getting paid to implement what you know to the player and to get it through to them. It doesn't matter what you know. It matters what they know. And let me tell you a little secret. It was the biggest flaw that I had as a coach. You know, people that work with me would tell you that I was better explaining things to other coaches because it was kind of on a different level, a higher level, and I wasn't as good at just this, understanding each individual player's ability to learn. I didn't spend as much time of it. It was more of a lecture, and it was up to them to learn it. That's not good. And that's why I'm so adamant about this, because I can stand up and raise my hand and say, I wasn't good at this. I didn't spend as much time to know how the player learned. So therefore, it's great that I knew it stone cold, but how are they going to know it as well if I don't know that I need to do it this way? And I think you got to teach. The only way to really know and to learn is you got to teach it in all three areas. You're going to figure it out. Some guys are going to pick it up in the classroom. Some guys are going to pick it up on the practice field. You can figure out if it's an auditory learner, a visual learner, or a tactile learner. You're the communicator of information. You got to know how you guys learn. How can you possibly expect them to process what you're telling them if you don't know how they learn? You know, in presenting the game plan during practice each week, coaches got to use all three methods. You start by talking through the game plan, the auditory part, follow it with film study, which is visual, on the board as well. Then whole practices and walkthroughs. That's the tactile part. Okay. Now, there's some guys that are going to learn it better than one way, better than the other. So you got to spend the extra time teaching them the way that they best understand it. So you do it all three ways, but then you have to regroup, go back, and talk it through with them individually as a group. Let's say you've got three guys that are visual learners. Spend a little more time doing that. Three guys a little more tactile learners. Maybe you take those guys out. Even with chairs or, you know, blocking dummies, you can do things. Believe it or not, the walkthroughs are big to see it. Oh, yeah, I get it now. I see what you mean. Then, you know, you've got the visual part with film, extra film. Give them extra cut-ups. give them quizzes. You can do that now. I mean, you can always do quizzes, but now you can do it through video. And you can see whether they're in there studying it. You know when they've opened up their iPad now, because like a computer, it is a computer, of course, but you can learn when they went in, when they went out, how much time they spent, what they spent it on. So there's a lot of things you do. You got to spend that extra time. Really, really important. So, you know, you hear this a lot. Players fall asleep in meetings. That's not good. Of course it's not good. But a lot of those guys, people say, you know, like people will laugh. Oh, man. Lawrence Taylor fell asleep in all meetings. This guy, Emmitt Smith, fell asleep. A lot of these guys, they were great players. Yeah, they just showed up and played on Sunday. No, they didn't. They showed up and played on Sunday. But those guys are auditory or tactile learners. They're not visual learners. So when they see it on film, they don't see quite what you see. You got to talk them through it, or you got to walk them through it. And you do it with those guys, because if they didn't know what they were doing and they went the wrong way, they made the wrong read on the block, they were misaligned, you didn't see that with those guys, but they weren't great film guys, but they could learn other ways. You got to know that. So, you know, you might have a bunch of guys that are really high GPA type guys. College is primarily an auditory experience. They learn from lectures. College get college students. Another team might have guys who were a little bit better, not in lecture classes, but in labs. They're tactile learners. That's why we always studied it. Belichick always had us study about what classes did they take in college and what were their grades in them. An awful lot. I mean, you know that. You might have done better in a lab than in a lecture, or vice versa. It tells you right there what type of learner, and maybe your level of motivation to learn. Well, that tells you, too, what's your motivation to learn football. So these are all the things you try to uncover when you're evaluating a player. Now that you've evaluated and you've got them, then you can figure that part out. So you got to do a better job of identifying how a player's learn, how a player, you know, how you rethink how you're coaching and teaching strategies. Let's say you're a receiver coach and you realize all five guys are tactile learners. Why wouldn't you take them out on the field in sweats at 8:30 and walk them through your teaching points? Then go into the 9 a.m. meeting with a better chance of picking up the game plan. Yeah, I'm going to take them out there. I'm going to do both. And until I know whether they're tactile, auditory, or visual learners, I'm going to do all three to discern which one is a better way. And I'm going to spend more time on that, make sure it gets through. So most players don't realize what type of learner suits them. Most coaches don't know what type of learners they are either. Most coaches spend time teaching the way they taught themselves to learn or how they learn. So they spend 15 minutes in a meeting, then watch film for hours and hours because that's how they figure things out. These coaches can't be truly effective until they know how their players will learn. I've done it again, gone a little bit long. I'm going to stop there. I'm going to talk about a little bit more on learning because I think it's important. I think it's interesting. I hope you find it as well. I'm going to talk about sideline adjustments and how technology, you know, is affected in the course of a game now as opposed to the past. And for No Life, for Richard from Tampa, Kevin, we're going to talk about, I'm going to get to one of these questions here in a second. But before I do, I'm going to tell you about a good friends at MyBookie. Now, let's say you found $100 on the street. Would you pick it up, keep walking? Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it. When you're betting, it's just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you can bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y, to activate the offer. That's promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. Visit MyBookie.a-g today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, I'm going to want to address a really good question that came in from No Life asked, Chris, what are your thoughts about Urban Meyer claiming he invented the zone read option offense when Rich Rod actually was the one who did it at Glenville State? Well, first of all, there is a lot of misconceptions about a lot of things about who invented this, invented that. Football coaching schematics are all developed over time. They're modified from different systems and ideas. It's taken different concepts. And yes, some of them are discovered kind of by accident, discovered based upon trial and error. Necessity is the motherhood of invention. Oh, they are invented by necessity. I worked for Bill Orangebarger, who invented the 3-4 defense. He invented it because they were short defensive linemen. They were deep at linebacker, and that no-name defense became, hey, a three-man front wasn't used before. Oh, there may be some people that use it. Does it mean that Bill invented it, you know, for all of football? I'm absolutely sure that somebody was doing it at some point. But Bill did it. He did it for Don Shula and the Dolphins. And, you know, he did it out of necessity. That's creative thinking from a football standpoint. Yes, he invented it for what they do and how they do it and how they played it. First of all, Rich Rod, his read option, the zone read option, is different than Urban Meyer's. Okay, it's not the same. Conceptually, there's ideas. There were people before Rich Rodriguez and Urban Meyer that did some of the conceptual ideas that they're doing. Did Rich Rod invent it in his style? Did he do it at Glenville State? Yes. A lot of these guys like to claim they were the first ones to do it. Rich Rod wasn't the first. Urban, but he was the first to do it his way. Urban does it a little differently. And they did it, not copying someone else. I don't necessarily think that this is a Urban trying to tell people. No, he honestly did it, invented it through trial and error on their staff, and creatively figured it out. It is a little different. Now, did they get it from Glenville State? I don't think they did. Maybe they got it from somewhere else. Maybe they just got it by trial and error. It is a little different, and it happens all the time. How you play coverages, how you play fronts, how you block things, how you scheme things up. I think where people get confused is the branding of it is always, well, hey, this was the first guy. Neither one of those guys was the first guys to do it, but they were the first to do it for themselves and how they did it. Bill Walsh, what, invented the West Coast offense, right? He invented the West Coast offense. But if you look at the West Coast offensive principles, they were being done by a guy named Bob Schnelker with the Vikings, with Fran Tarkenton and Chuck Foreman. But it wasn't branded as the West Coast offense, and it wasn't completely like the West Coast offense. But a lot of that was a byproduct of what Bill Walsh stemmed from and did his own thing. With some different elements, with the fullback, with the slant route, the quick slant, those elements were a little bit different and modified. So did Bill Walsh invent the West Coast offense? Well, what's the West Coast offense? It's a modification of something else, and it was branded West Coast offense. So all the West Coast, everybody does it. And this, you know, people say, what's the West Coast offense? I mean, it's like, what's food? Well, you got Mexican, you got Italian, you got different types of Italian food, you got different types of Mexican. You go on and on and on. People get tied into too much of that. If you want to look at innovations, Paul Brown was the greatest innovator of basic concepts. Of the passing game, the greatest innovator originally that did the most, that was copied and developed, was Sid Gilman. And in modern era, Don Coryell probably did. I mean, he invented the route tree. He invented things. Now, did he invent every route? No. Did he do it? People modify. Football is evolving and ever-changing, which is why coaching, it's not about what you know, but how you think and how you learn and how you grow. It is not good enough to learn it a certain way at one place, and that's what you're going to do at another place, because when you go at another place, you're going to have to modify what you do. And if you don't have the creative mind to adjust and learn, you're not going to be able to do it. because things evolve and change. So when they evolve and change, you can't go back to that head coach's office anymore because you're the head coach somewhere else. And that's why thinkers and innovators become king in coaching, because they're constantly evolving. So, yeah, Urban Meyer did invent what he did. He absolutely did. It's a little different than what Rich Rod did. And if you certainly look at Rich Rod had more involvement in the zone read as it relates to the run game. But how they attack the line of scrimmage, the insertion points, quite a bit different. But yet, conceptually, somewhat the same, right? So, like, I got no problem with it. I don't think it's a case of somebody stealing somebody. Everybody steals an idea. That's what coaching is, learning, looking at film. Not only looking to see what your opponent's going to do, so how you attack it, but learning what other people do and implementing. So there are no real, true, original thoughts, but a constant morphing and evaluation. I mean, it's like clouds just going one direction and others and connecting and interconnecting and separating and going different directions. So I think you may be reading a little bit too much into that. But there is a lot of claims about this is what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And, yeah, we invented this. I can tell you with 100% certainty that neither one of them were the first ones to ever do it. But I do think that certainly Rich did some things at Glenville State out of necessity that were very unique. And he did it before Urban. The genesis of when Urban got started was a little bit later than when Rich did. But Urban did things, particularly at Bowling Green, but he also did it at Utah, that were very innovative. So whether he was the first one to do this or that, again, he was the first one to do what they did and how they did it. And there was an entry point for them that was a aha moment for them that said, oh, man, this is, you know, you didn't, you know, necessarily steal it from somebody else, but if he did, he's doing his job, because that's what you have to do. You have to really see what other people do and why they do it and why it works and whether it's beneficial for us and what we're doing. So that's my view on that whole process and whether it really started here or there. But no, there is a lot of ideas that are generated off of other ideas that are built. And built. I mean, it's no different with some of the, you know, Emory Ballard, quote unquote, the father of the option. But there were conceptually some ideas that he, and yes, he was the one that, quote unquote, did it and put it in and you know, okay, yes, but that was kind of where it was branded. But there were ideas, and it was being run even in the high school level out of necessity a little bit differently, but at the college level, it kind of birthed in there. But you don't know where the beginning and the end kind of takes place. It's really, really blurred. I mean, there are things that we did, I've been involved in coaching and in personnel, that are kind of innovative, but they're all derivatives of other ideas. And some of it is, you know, I don't like that, but boy, I'd like to do this. And I don't know, do you get credit for the fact that you like an idea, but not conceptually, you know, maybe a fit, but specifically that's not really a good idea for us, but this would be? Yeah, there's that is done all the time. So I don't know. I hope that answers your question. But no, he did invent the zone read for how he ran it, which is a little different than what Rich Rod did. So hopefully that answers your question there. No, that's a great question, Noah Life, and appreciate you sending it in, and kind of a new questioner. Hope you send more in. You can send questions to me on Twitter at Landry Football, or you can send them, hit contact Chris on LandryFootball.com, and we will come in. If I didn't clarify that enough, Noah Life, please send another one in, and I'll make sure that I do that. Hey, listen, for Richard and Kevin, you've got some really good questions. I have run out of time, gone over. It's okay. We've got some things. We're going to be able to address it. I know we got a big weekend of football to kind of go over a little bit, but we're gonna spend a little bit more time on sideline adjustments and classroom, what I call the sideline classroom. We're going to talk a little bit about that next week, starting on Tuesday. And then we're going to answer some of your questions. Some good questions. I'm looking to make sure that it's not real timely to where it needs to be answered now. No, I think these are going to be really good from Richard and Kevin next week. So we're going to get to that with you now on next week's show. We appreciate you joining us. Hey, enjoy the full weekend. College football, NFL. I know for your NFL fans, this is your first big week. For college fans, it's your second week. For those of you that love both like I do, it's the first full force. Everything going on. It is obviously the NFL's night on Thursday, and then obviously some games on Friday night in college. The feature matchups, A&M, Clemson, LSU, Texas. If you want the breakdowns of those games, go to LandryFootball.com. Detailed analysis and breakdowns of those games, as well as all the others by conference, you can find at LandryFootball.com. Become a member today. Get 50% discount by taking advantage of the year offer. We appreciate it. Listen, you like football, you're going to love LandryFootball.com. Appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again Tuesday on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.